They came from across North America. They meet here each week in the basement of an abandoned comic book shop to talk comics, covering all the news and info you need, to the latest reviews and even books to stay away from. Join your hosts, Infinite Speech, the Comic Book Clergyman, and the Spider-Man Geek, every week here on Tales from the Water Cooler.
And welcome everybody to this week's Tales from the Water Cooler.
Water Cooler.
Episode number 260. With us this week we have
Infinite Speech,
Spider-Man Geek,
and the Comic Book Clergyman. We are all back, even though a few of us are a little bit under the weather with some sniffles, so we apologize for our Donald Trump impersonations during the show.
<It'd> be huge.
So, there's no drug activity going on here. Just snot and sniffles.
Just the sniffles.
So,
I'm gonna blame Concrud on mine.
Concrud, absolutely. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, let's just dive right into NYCC because we sent our special correspondent on location to New York City for a full report. So let us know what would you come back with, Speech?
I come back with Concrud. That's what I came back with.
Oh, come on.
But let's see. It was 4 days of fun, madness, and just comic stuff, of course, left and right. And I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to the cons because my place of preference will always be Artist Alley. That's where I think the heart of the con is. All the stuff on the top on the show floor is all nice and it's big and cute and everything, but the heart is Artist Alley, where you get to actually be with the creators and they're there doing and creating and mingling with their fans. So let's see, day one we got off to a bit of a late start. But I will say that getting in, the whole process was great. A little bit less people on the first day. But got in, walked around, pretty much got the lay of the land and, you know, geeked out. Let's see. I finally, and this was like a really big thing for me, finally got to meet Stefan Sejic, which was just so freaking cool.
Nice.
That was... finally, and I got my copy of Ravine Volume 1 signed by him. Now I just got to get Ron Morris to sign it. But he's got really big plans for that series. And, you know, we talked Sunstone, Death Vigil. He's a huge player of Destiny, as I found out several of the Top Cow guys are. So we talked video games, and his wife was there. These two people are just freaking awesome, and they're just great, talented writers and creators. And I was just, you know, the guy lives in Croatia, so I don't think he's gonna be at a lot of these.
Did you tell him he could stay at your house?
Be like, hey, just come, man, come on over.
Yeah.
But let's see. That was real cool. I got to talk to Brian Edward Hill and Nelson Blake II. And we will be discussing their book later on this evening, which is Romulus number one.
Nice.
And what's funny is what a lot of creators I've noticed, a lot of our talks start off with comics and end up at movies or video games. Some of these guys are like really avid gamers. And I just, you know, sometimes when they start talking about frame rates and, you know, moving here and there, I'm like, oh, okay, I just want to punch kick and do some specials.
Nice.
Buddy of mine was calling me on the other side of the floor because he had ran into Jim Starlin, who he has been like a fan of, like a lot of us are, for decades.
Yeah.
And it was just on that day, he happened to have his Infinity Gauntlet trade with him.
Ooh.
And he got Jim to sign it.
Nice.
Did he sign your Infinity Gauntlet?
No. Sorry. I didn't bring it. See, I should have. I should bring it. You know what? I should bring it every
year. Yeah, you should be wearing that every time you go anywhere.
Every time I go anywhere?
Yeah.
Job like interview. Anywhere.
Yeah.
Job, they're like, job interview.
They're like,
church.
What's that? You're like, that's my Infinity Gauntlet.
I wield the Where's power yours? Of a god.
Yeah, right. Everybody's wearing it these days. It's a cool thing.
And a friend of mine proposed to his girlfriend. She said yes. Boy. There was a huge Harry Potter cosplay, and she didn't expect it. She didn't know it was coming. And Leroy had asked her. I actually met Leroy at NYCC years ago. He was doing a Terminator 2 cosplay, and he just had real great prosthetics on, and we got to talking and became fast friends, and the guy's just awesome. So, yeah, that was just great thing.
Did you see the girl who cosplayed as the Mystique switching into the Soldier?
No.
But did you see that picture?
I saw pictures, and yes.
That was the winner for me.
Yeah, that is the best Mystique cosplay I've ever seen, hands down. You don't have to be butt ass naked.
That's right, man.
And it's just great. Now, as far as cosplays goes, I don't know if it was the best one, but Jeff, there were a lot of good ones. I don't know if you play, I know you don't play Overwatch, but you could always Google the characters or whatnot. Now, remember last year, the guy that did the really huge Hulkbuster armor?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, he came back again this year as Reinhardt. Now, Reinhardt in Overwatch is this huge knight.
Nice.
And he comes marching through the floor, and the crowds are parting like the sea, and it was just great to see. He was like probably 8 or 9 feet tall.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Marching. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Hulkbuster armor was about the same height. So, same guy. I guess he just likes to cosplay big. Go big or go home.
Right.
Let me see. Yeah, just got a few signatures. This time it was more about I did less panels. Let's see, sat in on the 50 years of Black Panther. Wanted to see what that was about. Ta-Nehisi Coates was there, Brian Stelle Freeze, Christopher Priest, Alex Alonso. The guy that plays the genie in the Broadway of Aladdin.
Oh, really?
Panel as well. Yeah, gave a nice little inspiring story there, and you know, brought a couple folks to tears. Now, I will say I was having a really moment, but during the whole Iron Fist thing, and I will say, leave it to someone, some random person, to just make me laugh. Michael Coulter comes out, and right on cue, this lady says, "Oh, I think he just got me pregnant." I was, I must have laughed for like a good 4 or 5 minutes. It was just, and when they pulled Sigourney Weaver on stage, the crowd went nuts.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what who she's gonna play. Who do y'all think?
She's gonna be a bad guy.
Yeah, I know, but who do you think she's gonna be?
Yeah. Now, did you guys read Defenders like growing up? Was that a title that you guys? Okay.
You mean like the Hulk, Namor, Doctor Strange version?
Just any version of the Defenders. I think the only one I read was when Bobby and Beast were on the team with Valkyrie.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Okay, that's the only version that I read, and I didn't read it often, so I was actually hoping you two would be able to be like, okay, give me a Defenders specific villain.
No, there's really, but I don't think there is one. I mean, so I'm wondering though, like somebody as big a name as Sigourney Weaver, like,
right.
I'm thinking that it's going to be somebody like pretty significant, but I, you know, like, I know there was a little bit of scuttlebutt that maybe, might be a female Mephisto, which might be.
Oh, okay.
But that's just speculation. I mean,
well, he can take many forms.
Absolutely. So there you go.
Now, another big moment, at least for me, was, you know, I'm really enjoying between Image and Valiant. They're like my top two. They're my own personal big two, because Marvel is depressing me on the comic book end, as we'll talk about later on tonight. But Valiant finally released their trailer for the new Ninjak movie, and it's bigger than what they were leading on. So it's Ninjak versus the Valiant universe. And they showed, and in the trailer, you've got Jason David Frank as Bloodshot, which I was kind of like, at first. And then to see it, like the full makeup, the fight scenes, and it's also they're partnering with the guys from Superpower Beatdown. So if you're familiar with Bat in the Sun and what they do,
yeah, that's good stuff.
Expect that just on a bigger scale. The panel was real cool. Everyone showed up. You got EXO. So pretty much you're going to have EXO, Manowar, Archer, Armstrong, Livewire, the Eternal Warrior, and Roku is going to be the main villain, which blew me away, because she is at least in this Ninjak versus the Valiant universe, she's the main villain, which blew me away because she's such a new villain. I was like, okay, and the fights look great, and I'm just hoping it does well so we get more. We actually sat down with Kevin Porter, who plays Armstrong, and we sat down with Sierra Foster, who will be playing Livewire. That interview will probably be up later on this week on comicattack.net. But Kevin Porter is...
I know him? What else has he done?
He's played Batman in on a lot of those Superpower Beatdowns.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's played Batman, but like for this role, he spoke about having to gain the Armstrong weight, which is you know, it's a much different build from Batman.
I've been trying to gain that weight for a long time, and nobody's hired me yet.
But well, I mean, how tall are you, Jeff?
I'm about 6'3".
Ah, see, he's 6'4 and a half.
Ah, see, that's why I didn't get it.
Yeah, it. Missed it by that much.
Just missed it by
missed
that
it
much.
By that much. Absolutely. That just looks fantastic, and just everything coming out of Image and them is just great. I just think it's, you know, time for a regime change.
There you go. All right.
Yeah, but I mean, NYCC was fun. It was great. It was just, you know, 4 days of getting able to see people that I usually don't get to see until you go to a con. So, you know, friends, nice. Creators, all that's that, good. You know, and always bumping into someone that you've just seen and just crossed your fingers that you could just see in person. Ric Flair was there for some reason.
Woo!
I heard the woo. Yeah. You hear that and you're like, what the hell? Ah, and it's Ric Flair.
Was Halle Berry there with him? Poor Halle Berry.
That would have been real nice.
Poor, I mean, what did she deserve? What did she do to deserve getting, you know, called out by Ric Flair, you know?
A ride on Space Mountain?
Yeah.
Is what he called it?
Why, I mean, yeah. What did she do? Well, who did she piss off, you know? anyway. Well, cool. Well, that sounds like it was a lot of fun, and you got to party with all the really cool people.
Yes, yes, I did.
That's awesome.
Had to show my bowling skills off.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
Yes. Still did not meet Stan Lee, so you know that didn't happen.
Or maybe the way you should say that is Stan Lee didn't get to meet you.
Meet you.
There it is. That's what's missing in his life.
He's waiting for
him. Yeah, he's done all this great stuff.
That's why he hasn't died yet. Your name is on his bucket list. he's like, I've got to meet Infinite Speech, and then I'll keel over and die, like, instantly.
I can pass on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep, we'll see. But now people will hear this and try to keep me away from Stan now.
Yeah.
And be like, no, you can't beat Stan.
Then he'll die, exactly.
Yep, see? Now is the catch 22, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
Now I'm the bad guy.
Oh, shoot. Well, cool. Well, that's the NYCC report from Infinite Speech. So, so I think Dan mentioned it last week, but so this is episode 260, and we are going to try a little different format tonight. We're not going to dive into this week's picks. We're not going to rate any books. We're really just going to talk a little bit about kind of what's on our mind in terms of comic books and share some things that are, you know, some things that we read, some things that we like, some things that we dislike, and we'll just kind of see where it goes. But I thought I'd let, since, you know, honestly, this is Dan's idea. I want to hear what he, what were the things that, that tickled your fancy this week or not?
That tickled my fancy or not. Well, can we start off with first, because I think this will lead into a little bit of discussion before we get on to some good stuff. The Death of X comic book.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Now, I'm sure by this point we've all read it. You know, aside from the fact that two people on the water cooler have a beloved character that they have in common, that bites the big one in Death of X. So that sucked. But overall, though, before we get into the nitty-gritty of that, I just don't get Death of X as a storyline concept. It seems like we already know the Terrigen Mists are killing off mutants.
Yeah.
Why are we going back in time in the Marvel Universe, like a year or 9 months ago or whatever it is, to see how that started, how they realized that the mist... This is like Fear of the Walking Dead, but for... The Terrigen Mists of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And I don't get the point of it if we're already
at a point. We have to fill in that Secret Wars gap, right?
But why didn't they just... I mean, the reality is that they had an idea. They said, hey, let's make this cloud, and it's going to kill mutants and make them sterile or whatever. And but they didn't really have the story in place yet. I mean, that's really... I mean, that's what it is. So they said, well, let's figure out a way to, we'll time jump and do this, and then people will go, hey, what happened to Cyclops? And so then we'll be able to go back and write the story and that kind of thing. But never has there been a more appropriate title for a comic book. I mean, for me, because to me, this is the death of the X-Men as a comic book for me. And those of you who have listened to the water cooler for a long time know, I mean, the three of us are about as big X-Men fans as there have ever been. And, and it's not just because, and I'm going to spoil it, but it's not just because Madrox died in this issue. It's the whole concept. It's the direction that they're going. I don't know what Marvel's thinking. I don't know who this is for. I don't know who is like, yes, like I really want the X-Men to all die, and I really want the Inhumans to be the, like, who wants that?
So, well, what's confusing me is this, okay? Everyone has known for a while what the Terrigen Mist do to mutants. I mean, Henry McCoy is running around with the Inhumans. The Avengers know what's going on. Like, everyone knows. And these guys have fought side by side to save the universe, the galaxy, and all that. So at some point, these guys are friends and everything, but no one seems to give a shit that the cloud is rolling across the planet, making mutants. New Inhumans, but killing mutants.
And the leader of the X-Men has wind power. Just so you know.
Yeah, but I mean, she can't disrupt currents all over the planet without it affecting some other part. That's the only drawback to Storm's powers. I mean, if she does something huge in one area, it will affect another. I mean, but you would think with Tony Stark and T'Challa and all these other brilliant people, Peter Parker, that we'd be able to come up with something. Hey, let's just get a giant ass vacuum, suck it out in the space, let it go. I mean,
especially
something,
since
anything.
It's actually sort of concentrated in a cloud that travels, right? It's
right.
It's got like parameters. you can. They could have figured out by now how to stop Terrigen Mists from spreading.
I mean, it's civil, and it's funny because a lot of the holes that's being poked in this is taking place in Civil War. Even in Civil War X-Men, it's like Medusa really doesn't give a shit what happens. You know, and it, the conversation was brought up there, and it's been brought up in A-Force, and I'm just really confused at how Marvel is trying to spin this, because like I said, it just seems like, let it kill the mutants. Even though, you know, these guys have helped save the entire world time and time again, we won't do anything to stop the eradication of their species.
I just don't get it. I don't understand. And okay, and here's a continuity issue that I have. It's not, I mean, I'd have to actually go back and look at this, but last I recall, Madrox was not on Muir Island running Muir Island. And hasn't been since X-Men like 160 when they fought Proteus or whatever. You know, like what comic books are Jeff Lemire and Charles Soule reading where it's like, oh yeah, let's go to Muir Island. Oh, we haven't been there in a while. Oh, look, Madrox is the only person working here, and let's just kill him
without his wife or child.
Exactly. And then he's like, now granted, they will do in this like they did with the Legacy virus. I mean, Madrox really isn't dead. Like this, even though the one guy said, "I'm the original," you know, it's like, you're not really the original. Yeah. Like they'll
right. Whenever you say it.
Yeah. Look, right.
We fell for that twice already.
Yeah.
We're not doing it a third time. So we've already fallen for that two times.
So, but there
what
again,
was that, the Legacy virus that we thought killed him.
But there again, like we've seen that so many times that even his death, it has no impact on us, and it only makes us more cynical and more like, you know what, this is dumb. So I'm out. I'm officially out of the X-Men for like, I'm really out until Marvel like completely.
But there's still three more issues.
Oh. Well, you'll have to tell me about them because I'm not reading them. I will say this: Aaron Cooter's art was really good, which is a shame because it was a waste of his talent. Like he, I thought the art was phenomenal, and I was thinking, gosh, get this guy on a regular X book, you know, actually doing something cool. But I'm just disgusted.
Like I said, it was just. I mean, the only good part is it. I was like, yes. I get to see Cyclops kick the bucket, but then I'm like, oh, there's Kid Cyclops over in Champions that they have yet to send these kids back to the past, because for some reason, when it comes to going back to your timeline, these are the only kids that can't go back that the heroes can't send. These guys rip through time back and forth like it's Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just gonna go travel through time.
And here's an arbitrary law that these guys can't go back. Like, you know, everybody can do everything in the Marvel universe except for, you know, send this group. Anybody can travel through time except for these kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Of course. The only thing, when I was reading it, I was like, yeah, Hydra has cool uniforms.
Yes, that actually impressed me, because you get the new design for the Hydra agents, but you know, and you get the two stories, how, you know, we get to see how the Inhumans are, you know, everything's great and hunky dory for Crystal and friends, but for Scott and his friends, everything is all morbid and
you see the shift in tone as well. It's like so subtle.
Yeah.
You know, and you get magic, and see, this was my thing as well, which made this whole story seem forced. Magic is saying all the right things. Scott, as everybody praises Scott, is this very, you know, messiahic leader who knows all. No, we're just going to keep going, Magic. Yes, you're bringing up valid points about our safety. Yeah, but we're just going to push on, even though I feel sick, and so does Gold Balls. I don't care about his safety. Yeah. We're just going to go forward.
And especially since there's a million dead Madroxes all over the place. Yeah, let's investigate right. this and, further.
And Gold Balls can't be too sick because he's running around in Spider-Man going to school with Miles.
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah, Dan, Death of X was a huge disappointment. But I'm going to be that guy to just finish it out, because I do want to see how it ends, because this is the train wreck I can't turn away from.
That's what they want. The only other comic, that's what they want you to do.
Well, I know, but see, there was another comic that came out that I will not get the second issue, and it was a train wreck, and it was just horrible.
Which was?
But it wasn't as bad as Death of X. It was Cage with the exclamation point.
Oh my God.
I didn't even, I flipped through it just to see.
That's all I did too. I flipped through it.
I thought this is like, this is everything like that the TV show is not like, yeah.
Not even the TV show. It's just not what Cage has been for, I mean,
30 years?
For like what? 30 damn years. And I'm like, okay. Like the only part I liked was the part of the basketball court. That was it. That was the only part in that book that I liked, because Cage won. Everyone was giving I know I'm gonna screw his name up, but it's the artist for Samurai Jack and all that. And this is where people were giving him a pass. And this is what I don't like. I don't care how great your past works are. That doesn't negate the fact that he put out hot garbage, because that's exactly what it was. I mean, we praise Chris Claremont's X-Men run, like from here to the end of time. However, that did not excuse that huge pile that he was putting out for us, you know, not but what, 10 years ago almost.
Hmm.
Yeah, but Cage number one, it was just bad. So bad.
From bad Cage to good Cage. Have you guys watched Luke Cage?
I've watched the first two episodes, I think.
Okay.
All right.
I've watched the first.
I did finish it.
I'm about halfway through, I think.
And right. Speeches in it three times.
I've actually seen it one and a half.
All right.
I liked it. However, I will say it could have been maybe two episodes shorter.
That was our criticism of Daredevil and Jessica Jones too. I mean,
right? Yeah,
I
think, both I suffered from the same thing, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say, I was dragging a little bit through kind of the, like, around episode 4 and 5, and then things picked up big time in episode 6, and so that's kind of where I am right now. But so I'm fully engaged and I'm excited. But I think the thing I can safely say that isn't spoiling anything, but I think the thing that they have gotten, I just think they've gotten the tone of the character. I think they've gotten the tone of just the way that they've produced the show. I think the way that it looks, the way that it feels. The soundtrack, I think, is really good, without being, at least in my mind, without being exploitative. I feel like the characters are complex and strong and not stereo. I was afraid that there would be some stereotype characters in there, but even the ones that you think are kind of stereotyped, like in terms of kind of cliche, the roles that they play, like, okay, this guy is the villain, and this guy. But even there's some depth and some, you know, some good characterization in there. And so far, I think it's right on par with the other Marvel shows. I can't say it's necessarily better or worse. So,
yeah, like I still, Shades is kind of iffy with me. Like I like him within it at times. I don't like. I know people who absolutely hate the character. Like at NYCC,
I think that's the point,
either
right?
Met people that loved it or that hated it. Well, not like they hated the character as in his motives and what he did for the story. They just thought he was a waste of space, and it should have been done with something else. Like I kind of pictured him as like that disembodied voice that's always nudging you here or there, like, you know, your conscience, but they gave him a body and a pair of shades.
Yeah, yeah. He is a little kind of sniveling, kind of like, yeah, he is. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's pretty much like you said, Jeff, like music wise, it's great. The environment, the whole feel of Luke Cage is great. But like I said, two episodes shorter, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm.
Well, cool. So anything else? What else are you guys liking or not liking, for that matter?
In comics or for Luke Cage?
Whatever. We can move on.
Whatever. yeah, because I want to talk about this surprise that came up when. So I don't know if you guys ended up checking it out or not, but I picked up Green Valley because Giuseppe Camuncoli drew it. I know, Jeff's favorite. It's not like he's a favorite of mine. I'm just always curious to see, and especially when I, you know, discover an artist on one thing and then I see them do some other work. So I'm curious to see the differences of the, you know, quality, sometimes even style. So I checked out Green Valley, and it really surprised me. So I had to look up the writer, which is Max Landis.
Yeah.
And Max Landis is mainly like a screenwriter. He wrote the movie Mr. Right with Sam Rockwell and Anna Kendrick. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but that's a pretty funny movie about two weird people falling in love with, you know, common weirdness. Weirdness being an assassin for hire. But that's, you know. So there's a lot of humor in the writing. So Max Landis is a funny guy, basically. So I was curious to see the theme of this. It basically is set in the almost the medieval times. The book opens up with just two guys on a horse having the weirdest conversation, or the, you know, does my helmet make my head look big or something, right? They're having this funny conversation, but you soon realize that they're out on the battlefield, and then, you know, the enemy, the leader of the enemy comes over and, you know, starts threatening them. And then in sort of this really cool, calm manner, you find out that these guys on the horses shooting the shit are actually these legendary sort of heroes for this this area that they, I forget the name of it, but so they basically, you know, hand this guy a new one, or humiliate him is more like it, but in a really sort of comedic way. The tone then shifts as you find out a bit more of these heroes' relationships with each other. They're kind of like the medieval times version of the Avengers, almost, if you take a myth and a legend and exaggerate that, you know, as things went in those days. You know, it's all about rumor, reputation, and all that. So these guys are basically superheroes, but they're just really good at what they do. So they're funny characters, and the art was really, really good in comparison to this week's Amazing Spider-Man number 19, which Camuncoli also drew. And if you look at both, so I don't know if it's because of the inker slash colorist, which did an amazing job, I found, on Green Valley. Just double check. I want to give credit where credit's due. So the inker was Cliff Rathburn, and colorist was Jean-François Beaulieu. So those guys did an amazing job on Camuncoli's pencils, while in Amazing Spider-Man, is it Cage, Camuncoli, Smith, Keith? Those guys, I don't know if it was the pencils or not, but it just didn't come out the same. So it's pretty fun to see the difference, that quality of work that an artist will give. So he's just cashing in a paycheck on Spider-Man, and in Green Valley, he kind of put some effort into it, and I found that it paid off. Especially the scene where the main character catches that axe, the battle axe.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It's just so cool. So, and the story is really gripping. There's, you know, this is going to go on to be a bit of a story of vengeance and a breaking down of a main character. So I can't wait to see what's going to happen to him as he's stuck in the middle of his burning village, naked in front of the enemy that he humiliated at the beginning of the issue. So, yeah. Spoilers. So it was strong. It was funny. It was, the concept is cool. The camaraderie between the characters is really awesome. And the art brought it home, but especially the colors and inks. So, if you guys checked it out, like, what did you think?
Well, when you,
I mean,
Go ahead.
I loved it. Like, as soon as I saw the first page, I was like, okay, because I had actually just read Amazing Spider-Man, and I said, all right, I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but it does seem like, all right, let me go ahead and get this out the way so I can draw this. And Green Valley was just great. I love that whole medieval warrior, you know, you got to fight the barbarian type of stories. And it was funny. And, you know, he was like, I bet your ear. And he said, what? I said, yeah, bet you your ear. And his buddy shot it clean off. And it was just great. And I kind of I didn't want to, well, I'm trying to say this without spoiling, but look, you know, when you're about that retired life and you ask the woman to marry you and you're in that I slay the barbarian lifestyles, just know within 48 hours, she's going to die and all of your hopes and dreams are going to die with her. And I will say, Kevin Coley drew like one brutal scene that even though you expected it and you knew it was happening, like he's carrying her, he's butt ass naked, there's arrows, there's fire, and she's burnt, like she's just charred, and he's just crying. I was like, ah, and I actually felt for that scene just because of how well Kevin Coley drew it. And I also met him at NYCC, Jeff.
Oh, there you go. I bet he's a nice guy.
Nice. Nice guy, very nice guy.
Well, when I
he's
saw
he's coming for you.
Yeah. Oh, he's coming. For you. he's gonna haunt my dreams. So you know, when you mentioned this, I was kind of avoiding it because I knew that Kevin Coley drew it, so I didn't even pick it up. And this is just I'm gonna say, and I hope Giuseppe, I hope you're listening. You probably aren't, but I hope you're listening because I will be a man and I will eat my words and say. And this is kind of what I've said all along, that that Kamen Coley is a great artist, but he does not fit Amazing Spider-Man. And this is proof of that. Like this was awesome. I mean, I'm talking visually. It was fantastic. I think he nailed everything. Everything in this was really, really good. And I think the inking and the coloring, just only enhanced it even more. But I mean, the tone of this book was just really good, and I loved the. This is kind of where I am, and we'll talk about this probably with another book, but I just like new ideas that don't seem like I've read them a million times, and like this that opening conversation just completely drew me in because I've never seen that. I've never seen, you know, something that took place in kind of that fairy tale ish kind of, you know, fantasy kind of genre, and it be that funny without it being like hokey, but like I don't know, he's got the dialogue down, I think. And it was good. And so yeah, when he starts, you know, when he and the girl start, you know, building that relationship, I was like, oh crap, like I did kind of see that a little bit, but thought it was,
she won't make it.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was really well done, and I like the camaraderie between these four guys. I think that's gonna be interesting to see that develop. I wouldn't want to be the barbarian king after this issue because this guy's going to destroy him. It's got revenge. It's got good. Like bromance, it's got, you know, it's good. I like it. So I'm gonna stick with it. So thanks for picking it there.
Yeah, I actually saw that that Nick from the site had like really, really like he tweeted about it, and I didn't know what it was at first, and then you know I checked it out just based on that because sometimes he's right, sometimes even though he's a Cyclops fan. Sometimes he is right, but
oh, that Nick,
yeah, that Nick,
right.
So I mean, you know, if you out there, if you haven't read Green Valley and you love the sword stuff, the barbarian stuff, knights and all that, and just brutality, pick it up. Even though we've probably spoiled it for you, but like I said, that's the only that was the only drawback with the story, and because it was too cliche at that point. My man was retiring. He found the woman of his dreams, and he asked her to marry. Those three things right there will get her killed.
That's right.
In almost every story. Yep. Somebody's going to die. So
that's right.
I learned that at a very early age. Just you see, if he would have like asked her to marry him, but kept the job, like, hey, I'm going to keep on, she would have been fine. Maybe one of his buddies would have ended up dying, but nope.
Well, that was what I was afraid of too. I thought one of the buddies was gonna die. So, but we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I do want to segue into your pick, Gid. So why don't you Because along the same lines, I want to talk a little bit about yours.
Well, this has been on my radar, and I want to say it was one. I really like Nelson Blake's artwork, and I've liked it. He's been an artist on with Top Cow for some time. So if he's on a title, I'm going to give it a shot. But Brian Hill also writes Postal, and I'm loving the complexity of Postal. So when I found that these two guys were making a comic together, I was like, why not? And it's called Romulus. And Brian Hill, if you follow him on Twitter, this guy has been so excited about this book. Like, the hype train has been in full effect, full steam. He tweets about it every day. He's had these little Romulus-isms that he drops every day. He tweeted that, you know, if you tweet at him, he will give you a Romulus name. And I think Comic Attack's name is Ravenith, and there's a little story about it. And it's just, like, he gets the fans involved. So, and then I saw some of Nelson's artwork pertaining to this, and I'm like, oh, shit. So you have this female protagonist. Her name is Ash. Her mom's name is Axis. They belong to this secret society. And they've pretty much, you know, been steering the world in one direction or another. And but there was one mission in particular that Ash's mom doesn't have her do, but Axis, she carries it out on behalf of her and her daughter. And then mom decides it's enough. They need to go. And Ash, I think at this point in time, is like, I want to say 19, maybe. And on a mission, her mom dies, and it's just bad. And then Axis has a sword named after her mom, and it's just a real gritty story that delves into the world of secret societies and assassins. And one thing I like about Nelson, he understands body mechanics and fight scenes.
And I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, that's a real big gripe of mine when I look at a fight scene from an artist. And what's funny is that years ago, I was referencing how bad a fight scene was, and I was at a convention, and apparently I was talking about a book that a certain artist had drawn, and I didn't know that artist was an earshot. And I wasn't like bashing it, but I was just speaking how it works. And I was asked if I was an artist. I said, no. He said, well, then you possibly couldn't know what you're talking about. I said, are you a fighter? He said, no. I said, well, I am. And you possibly couldn't know what you're talking about. So, yeah.
So fighter slash artist is really the way to go.
Probably. And then, you know, I did find out that Nelson does have a background in fighting, kind of a lot like how David Marquez does as well. Because I've watched how he frames and does some of his choreography, and you can kind of tell there. But Romulus, I like secret society stories like this, and it's very rare that you get a mother-daughter relationship at the forefront. It's usually that whole father-son or father-daughter or the creepy Wolverine and little kid girl. So. Yeah,
you know what's really awesome? Like, what stood out to me about this book is the setup. You go through where, you know, Ash is a teenager, so you start at basically her mom's teachings, and you get a really quick overview of the seven circles on that first page? The seven spheres, right? So, you know, her from baby to 10 to the training of the seven spheres, and then you move on to 16 years old. Right. And her training continues. Then you learn about her mom. You learn about Romulus. You learn about the hunters, and all through the years going 16, 17, 18, you know, 19 and all up to the way she's 21 now. So that catches up to present day, essentially. But the first something like dozen pages is this whole setup of fast forwarding through Ash's life. But in doing so, you learn about Ash, her mom, Romulus, the hunters, like the state of everything. This entire world got designed and shown to us in those first 12 pages, and it didn't feel overbearing at all. It's like it was interesting and it flowed, and you got just enough of every character to like situate yourself as soon as we get to present day and see Ash coming in and kicking ass. So I really enjoyed the setup of this. I thought it was pretty brilliant. And Nelson Blake, right? Uses a traditional panel layout, which is so often not seen. So right. There you go. But it's sort of traditional, you know, rectangles and squares that are just and nothing too dynamic until we get to, you know, your first full one page panel, which is pretty kick-ass. Then you start to see a bit more dynamic stuff go after a little bit later there. But otherwise, it's a traditional panel layout. Good setup at the beginning, those first dozen pages, and just a great ending. It's the stakes are high. You've got the whole world right there in that first issue. So I thought it was pretty brilliant.
Well, I'm glad y'all liked it. this is what I mean by like, I'm so dang tired of seeing female dark assassins who have been raised to kill people. I just feel like it's a story we've seen 14 million, 100 times. There was nothing in here that really stood out to me. Like, I just felt like it was all derivative. Maybe there was something. I started reading about halfway, and then I was like, I don't like this. So I stopped reading it. So I don't know if it got better at the end or not. But to me, you know, this is like X-23, Black Widow, rehash with a panel that looks like he copied an image of Gilmore Girls between the two of them. I mean, I'm pretty sure Lauren from Gilmore Girls. I'm pretty sure she's
Graham.
I have no idea because it wasn't a show I watched.
Okay, I'm pretty sure that she plays the part of the mom in one scene. But anyway. Having said that, so this just isn't my thing. I recognize that. I really am glad you guys like it. But the art, I will say, despite that one little insignificant little where it looked like Lauren Graham, the art is amazing. Blake is really, really good. So I did enjoy looking at it. But yeah, the story is just not.
Sounds creepy. Sounds really creepy.
What? What sounds creepy?
I enjoyed looking at it.
Oh, yes. Through the window.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. Yeah, there's nothing flashy. I mean, I was gushing over the technique, the setup, and the story. But I see what you mean. It's not. There's nothing that stands out. As far as, I can say originality, the execution of it, I really appreciate it, and it's really good. But I see what you mean. Like even the clothes she's wearing, you'd think there'd be something more.
Yeah,
it's just normal. It's very plain. It's plain. You know.
Well, that's how assassins do. Assassins blend in. That's true. They don't have the resources of the order in anymore, and they've pretty much. It looks like. They give the resources to those steroid enhanced male
hunters,
soldiers.
Yeah.
Now those outfits are pretty badass.
But yeah, those are kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I like those designs there. But yeah, I mean, those guys get it all. The wolves, you know, they gotta blend in. They can't run around in special covert ops outfits.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I did want to talk about something that I read this week that tickled my fancy a little bit. Even though, I mean, after having just said,
you go again, being creepy.
I know,
being
tickling
creepy.
Your fancy, staring at stuff now.
Just, I know.
Don't touch my fancy.
And especially having just talked about stuff that you know felt like a retread. You know, the book that I enjoyed the most this week was. Was Jessica Jones number one, which is a retread because it is it's Brian Michael Bendis
creative team.
Yeah, and Michael Gatiss who are the creative team who created Jessica Jones and did the awesome series called Alias, where which kicked off her story. And this, picked up. I felt like kind of. I felt like they didn't really miss a beat. This felt very much like the old Alias series. But what I really like about this one is I felt like the tone. This feels like Jessica Jones. It feels like the Jessica Jones from Alias. It feels like the Jessica Jones from the TV show. Whereas I don't feel like the kind of the tradition since Alias. I don't feel like she's been written this way in the more mainstream Marvel universe. And so, but throughout all of it, she there's a big mystery. Everybody keeps asking, where is she? Where is she? Where is she? And talking to Jessica about where is she? And I immediately knew, okay, yeah, didn't she have a baby? Like, I was kind of thinking that. So it was like, so that's one kind of mystery that's kind of got me hooked. But the other thing, which I thought was even more exciting, was this this case that she takes, where this woman sits down with her and tells her that, basically her husband wakes up one day and feels like he's married to the wrong, that he has a whole nother family. Like, he doesn't know why he's married to this woman, but he's married. He has this other family that he remembers and all of that. And so, I thought that mystery was really great. And if you look at the newspaper, of the day, I guess, that he woke up, that she shows, or it's not a newspaper, it's on the tablet. It's the day that the Ultimate Universe ended and merged with the, 616. So right. my take is that this guy is actually, he's woken up and he's remembering his ultimate life. He's not remembering his 616 life. And actually, so then that ties in, and this is just my little prediction, to see if it pays off. But, Jessica is, there's this mystery surrounding where's her baby, and Luke Cage shows up at the very end and it says, where's our daughter? But I have a feeling that Jessica Jones is the Jessica Jones from the alt, or she doesn't remember that she has a baby. And because she's remembering her life from the Ultimate Universe. That's my prediction, at least.
I'm not sure though, because in Power Man and Iron Fist, they're there, and Danielle is there.
Or maybe there are two of them. I was very confused.
I don't know. But then Luke is asking her. I'm sure we're gonna find out, but it was just very confusing because I'm like, in Power Man, Iron Fist, Danielle's there, they're married, everything's fine. Here, Luke is like, where's the baby?
Yeah.
Spider-Woman, where's the baby? The crossing guard, where's the baby? I mean, everybody's asking, where's the baby? And, I also kind of, I noticed the names that were dropped, so this might have a Spider-Man tie-in as well.
Yeah.
And I think I think that may be the bigger part of the surprise. But with those little hints dropped, I think this is going to be very, very, very big and very good.
Yeah. So I'm interested in seeing kind of where it's going, and it immediately hooked me, and I really enjoyed it. What did you think, Dan? Did you read it?
Well, I did read it, and I really like that same idea that the mystery she has to solve here. It's like this didn't just affect superheroes, the convergence of the 616 and the Ultimate Universe, or any other parallel dimension for that matter. You see, a superhero wakes up in another parallel universe, in quantum leaped into that self's body, and he has to live it out. But, that shit can happen to normal people, too. So it's kind of, it was really intriguing and interesting to see that. What if this case isn't related to anything superheroic,
Yeah.
I was doing the same thing you were, Gid. I was reading into the names of the hints that were and clues that were being dropped by this Mrs. Brownlee. And I'm like, okay, do I know that name, Brownlee? Does that mean anything to me? Okay, the kid that his wife from his other life is Gwen, and they've got a child named Norman or something.
Norma.
I, like, okay. I think Norma.
Yeah.
As I'm kind of like, okay, so there's some okay, and there, she mentioned something about Peter Parker. I'm like, okay, there could be a Spider-Man tie in there, or maybe it's just somebody that works at the Bugle has no idea that Spider-Man exists. Like, it could be anything, and so I really thought that was intriguing. So that mystery shit, I gobbled it up all the time. This I love the whole private eye thing. I love the noir feel. I also love that Bendis can never pass up another opportunity to plug another one of his books. as Miss Marvel and Miles Morales and Nova just go by in one scene for no reason.
Yeah.
Right.
Other than to show that superheroes are you know, running around New York City. But it's typical.
You can be just sitting there having coffee. And what's funny is that every time I see a scene like that, I think that before Marvels ever came out, that was so rare.
Yeah.
To have an artist just, you know, they may throw in like Spider-Man swinging by, but after Marvels came out, we got to see that like a lot more, that the superheroes are in the world and you can just be having a random cup of coffee and, you know, these guys are on their way for their next big fight or whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really liked that. I thought this was a good, first issue. Something else I wanted to just say real quick that I read that I wanted to recommend to you guys. It's been out for a while, but I just picked it up. But it is it's called Dark Knight, A True Batman Story. It is it's an autobiography written by Paul Dini and art by Eduardo Risso. Have y'all heard about this book at all?
No.
Uh-uh.
So, you know, Paul Dini, who was one of the writers for Batman the Animated Series. So this is a story about, this is about his life, but, so it has Batman in it, but I don't want to spoil anything for you, but basically, when he was, writing for Batman, he was, mugged, in real life and it had a real major effect on him. And so this story, this graphic novel is about his kind of his how he's dealt with that trauma ever since then. So it's been like 20 years, you know. But but anyway, I think both of you would really, really like it. I mean, just both as Batman the Animated Series fans, but also just it's an interesting way that he tells the story. And Eduardo Risso draws it, and he's really good, and he does a lot of different styles in it. So check it out. It's called Dark Knight, N-I-G-H-T, not K-N-I-G-H-T. So a true Batman story. So go check it out.
A true Batman story.
Yeah, it's really good.
Ah, Batman. Did either of you read this past week's Batman?
No.
Nope.
Ah, well, I'm going to say this, and it's weird. Okay, it's 2016. The X-Men are going the way of the dodo. I've read three Aquaman. No, I'm sorry, more than that. But the past three Aquaman titles have been freaking fantastic. I actually read the Superman issue that came out this week, and I read the previous one, and I like them both. And yeah, shit is weird now. 12-year-old me would be very unhappy.
Don't you want to go back in time? Be unhappy and tell yourself,
like look, I'm like. I'm reading Aquaman, I'm reading Superman so far. Like I said, the last two issues were great. And I think it's because this version of Superman seems more humanized than the guy who can't be hurt by anything. This one has a family. He's got his wife, his kid, the dog. And this past issue, they go to like Dinosaur Island, and that's like a classic DC locale. And
is that
him,
like
his
the
son, and like, yeah, okay. Yeah, yep. And he's giving him like a, you know, they end up there accidentally, but while they are there, he's giving his son a history lesson because there's like dead World War II pilots, both Japanese and American there. There's, you know, giant dinosaurs trying to eat him, Crypto and his son, and it, you know, and it's real good. And it's just a lot of heart in this story. And I was like, damn. And it reminded me of the previous issue where they're at the county fair and he's taking a day off, but you know, they really can't take a day off even at the fair. But, you know, and I'm not reading Batman because it's freaking horrible.
Yeah.
And I saw people cosplaying as Gotham guy and Gotham girl. I just lowered my head and shook it just like, why? I mean, the costumes looked great, but I'm like, just why those two characters? And it made me think of why I dislike the current Batman run, the solo title. The detective one is like freaking great.
Yeah.
I'm like, Clayface is like always one of my favorite villains. So I like to see him be utilized, even though in real life, Clayface probably would have killed Batman by just shoving himself through his mouth and his ears. But, you know, he's Batman. He can do it all.
Yeah.
As we've seen in his current title, he can steer a plane, a 747.
That's right.
And one hand toss Solomon Grundy.
Yeah.
He's Batman.
Did either of you guys check out, we mentioned it earlier, Champions number one?
Yes.
What'd you think of that?
Yes. I was shocked that I liked it.
I was actually too. Yeah, I did not expect to enjoy it so much. But, you know, we've been talking a lot about how we're kind of tired of seeing all these heroes fight each other. And they kind of address that in this issue, that like all these teenagers are like, you know what? We're freaking tired of heroes fighting heroes. So let's actually do something positive in the world and actually be heroes. And so I thought that was a breath of fresh air. And I'm a big fan of, you know, the teen superhero books, you know, like New Warriors and it felt like New Warriors a little bit to me. Did you read it, Dan?
I didn't know, but I did flip through it, and it's on my to-read pile because Ramos.
Absolutely. Because Ramos.
Secondly,
it
just looked good, and I want to see what it just looked like, from what I could see flipping through it, that we're going to end up not liking young Cyclops.
Well, they'll probably make him a dick, yeah.
I expected that because old Cyclops is an ass and I don't like him. So, and I didn't like young Cyclops when they brought his ass back. I'm like, why? why are we bringing more shitty characters to our own timeline? Just leave them. Leave young Cyclops back there. Like, that whole premise just still boggles my mind. Maybe if he sees his younger self, he can talk. No, I'm sorry. He's not going to change his mind. No, I'm sorry. He's not going to see his younger self and be like, oh, you know what? I should stop being a dick. No, Cyclops is just dickish. That's his nature. His dad was a cool space pirate, and that's where all the cool genes left.
I think
it was just done at that point. His son is cool. So coolness just skips a generation.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm like, his dad, space pirate. Cable is just an all-around badass.
Yeah.
I mean, even Havoc is slightly cooler than Cyclops, but just not by much. It's like,
I miss cool Cyclops, though. I miss cool Cyclops from back in the day.
I mean, yeah, there were times where I was like, all right, Psych, you get a high five. But, yeah, I say lately, maybe the past 10, 15 years, it's been like, hell no.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anything else you guys want to bring up before we close out?
No, I think that pretty much does it on my end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. All right, well, we if you like our new format, if you like kind of the more, conversational format that we did, let us know. Or if you hated it, don't say anything.
Or if you hate Cyclops, if you hate Cyclops, let me know.
But you can always follow us on Twitter and at TFT Water Cooler, right? Okay,
There it is.
Or on Facebook also. You can follow us there. We want to thank all of our many supporters and outlets from TMV Cafe, Underground Video Network, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, ComicAttack.net. And don't forget to check out everything that's out there on ComicAttack.net, including chirps, reviews, news, manga, movies, columns, podcasts, and product reviews from SuperheroStuff.com. Go check out, if you're looking for Halloween costumes.
Did you get your new item?
I haven't
yet. Did you get your new item?
I haven't. I don't know what's going on. It hasn't come yet, so
I'm
interested to see what happens. So anyway, I might have to email them and ask them what the delay is. But so if you're looking for any Halloween costumes or anything, Super Stuff is a great place to go and check out some good stuff there. So go and do that. All right. Well. Hopefully next week we will be a little more healthy and not as snotty and in better voice. So anyway,
Dan's the only one that sounds normal.
Let's hope he doesn't get sick or he doesn't catch anything from us tonight.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, have a great night and stay thirsty.